Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. I want to let you know that we had recently on Apple Music a bit of a kerfuffle with some of our downloading and streaming. And so I'm going to ask you to go on your app and resubscribe to the Corner Store Podcast with Kevin Koval, just to make sure you're getting all of these weekly incredible interviews that we're doing, that we're providing. We've had some great people in the building, and today is no different. We have, you know, who I think is you know, first of all, a Renaissance man, someone who is a multi-hyphenate, who does a lot of things and a lot of things really well. But also, you know, for some reason, I feel like one of the most underrated rappers in Chicago's landscape, and both now but also historically, and I want to talk about that a little bit. Someone whose grind and hustle is on par with the greatest of entrepreneurs, someone who also spends a lot of his time when not in shelter touring this planet with his gifts, a man who I admire, who I really love his work, and also a great dude. We have Prob Cause in the Corner Store. Sir, welcome.
Thank you, man. Honored to be here, for real.
Yeah, man. No, it's a long time coming. I've wanted to have this conversation for a long time. You are out here in a way where most people, I mean, you're a rock star, you know what I mean? A rap star. Like, this is of course how you make your life, but you play regularly when we're not in shelter in front of thousands, tens of thousands of people. Talk about this lane that you've kind of found yourself in now for a while.
Yeah. You know, I came up in an underground Chicago hip hop scene. That's always been vibrant. Been playing shows since I was probably 14 or 15 years old. Yeah. Hosting shows, just integrated into the Chicago hip hop community. And over maybe the last 6 or 7 years, I kind of started get more into the electronic music world. You know, that has a lot of crossovers with the hip hop world. They're just like hip hop beats on steroids is how I kind of like refer to them. And linked up with all these amazing electronic producers, people like Grammatic. If you guys are unfamiliar, Grammatic, Grizz, some of these other people who are also rooted in hip hop music. And, you know, it's such a thriving scene, and it was kind of a combination of being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people at festivals. And, you know, that crowd really embraced me as one of the few rappers who was actually rapping over these beats. You know, there wasn't a lot of people like me rapping over that kind of production. So it was like a lot of things happening at once, and I found a really cool lane and a really hardcore fan base who's embraced me. And, you know, it kind of like flourished. I think the last time I saw you, I played a show in Denver.
Yeah, no, right? which I loved. Like, I think it was just happenstance. I think I was in town for a book or a play or something like that. Yeah. And then you're like, yeah, come out to my show. And so I didn't know what to expect, but the place was sold out. You had, you know, there were probably like 1,000, 2,000 people in the room. And like, they knew your shit. Well, like they knew you. Yeah, I was so proud and not surprised, but I was just like, yo, this is so dope. You know what I mean?
Thank you, man. Yeah, it's cool. It's like people, I think, you know, I took a different path than a lot of the other folks that were kind of like my peers at that time in the Chicago music scene. And I just found I fit into this lane in a really cool way and enjoyed it and enjoyed the people in it, and that's kind of where it took me.
I know you said, you know, it's a hip hop production on steroids, but what are some of like are because you know when I was at your show, like I as a hip hop fan, I'm reading it, listening to it as hip hop music. So what are some of the more nuanced differences between, you know, if there are any, between the cultures and between the sound?
It really comes down to the sound, I think. You know, it's more rooted in like kind of house music and the structures of music like that. There's like bigger drops, bigger buildups, more space for the instrumentals to just be instrumentals, and I kind of weave in and out of them. I'm not rapping for 4 minutes straight. I'm rapping for a minute and then letting, I mean, it's really akin to the original relationship between an MC and a DJ, in the sense that the producer is equally, if not more important than the MC. I'm kind of there to host the song in a way, and add bits and pieces where I can, and then fall back and let it breathe on its own. So I think that's one of the main things that I liked about it. It's like, it's not just about me being on stage and showing y'all that I can rap and I have some things to say. It's also about letting these beats build up. People are dancing, you know, people dance more at hip hop shows now, but like, the underground hip hop scene that I came up in and that, you know, you came up in too, well, it's different with the old school shit, but like, you know, people are kind of like,
yeah, a lot of head like nodding. Yeah.
Head with their arms crossed.
Yeah.
And
that'd be the most you'd get. That'd be the most you'd get.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I love that about it. I love the energy behind it. I love seeing a flooded audience all dancing. So like, I think those are some of the key differences, but ultimately it's really the same thing. These are interchangeable production sounds, you know?
Yes. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, you've recently put out a really great EP, you know, called Moonflower, and I want to get to that. But let's go back. I mean, I do remember you as a very young person in some of these scenes, in some of these parties, in some of these, you know, places. So let's go back, kind of talk about how you got started. I know your brother is also a musician, someone who, yep, who, you know, produced for a lot of different people. But yeah, how did you kind of get started?
So I remember talking to Cap D. I mean, he was probably like, who is this skinny little kid hosting this show? You know, so I just kind of like was in that world and super inspired by it and wanted to be a part of it and grow with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And so obviously this is something you've stuck to and stuck with. But I mean, that's, you know, we're talking now about a career that is you're a few decades in now, right?
Yeah, probably like 15 years I've been rapping on stages. And I would say for a decade, I've been touring nonstop for a decade probably. It's been my kind of like only source of income for maybe the last 6-7 years, where that's all I do. You know, I do the art and visual stuff as well. Yeah. But yeah, that's been my career path, you know?
And I want to talk about your visual art too, because like I said, you really do... You do many things very well. But, you know, take us through how you go from, you know, being a kid, you know, essentially in your brother's room, listening to these recording sessions, to then, you know, getting a gig at a place like Morrisland, to then having this be, you know, take us in between some of what you had to do and some of how you got over and got on in order to make this your career, yeah, your livelihood.
Yeah, I mean, I started when I got out of high school and started going to college. I started booking myself at small venues anywhere who would book me, you know. And I started with the Midwest circuit, so I would play in places like Champaign, Illinois, Bloomington, Indiana, Bloomington, Illinois, Iowa. Like I would just be hitting Midwest cities near college towns. And pretty much playing, I mean, these are like, I'm not talking about like venues even, like sometimes I'm playing in cafes, sometimes I'm playing in people's houses at house parties. And I just knew that I had to be on the road. I don't even know who instilled that in me. I think, you know, some of my mentors were like Psalm One and Longshot early on, and I saw them doing it. And I was like, okay, so this is what I do. I got to book myself a show wherever I can get one. So I just like made it a habit to always be on the road. I felt like I wasn't doing it right if I wasn't just booking myself for shows. So I was really doing it all myself. I would pack my car up and bring a homie with me to play my record or play the beats for me, a DJ. I wouldn't even call them a DJ. They were literally like plugging their phone in half the time, and just stuck to, I mean, I think I was so in love at that point with performing and being in front of people, and just the process of that I never stopped. You know, I was so in love with the process of it that it never felt like work for me. It just felt like, okay, I gotta keep going.
Now
along the way I would catch breaks, you know, every now and again.
What do you mean by breaks?
I would get like someone who would be at the house party would be like, oh, I work at the Canopy Club in Champaign, we have Big Sean coming there. Would you want to be the first of 10 on this show and open it up and be like, yeah, for sure. Like, they'd be like, all right, we got $25 for you. Is that good? You know, like, I was playing for peanuts, literally, like, for dinners and shit.
Paying dues for real, for real.
For real, for real. For 6-7 years, I'm talking about, you know?
So two questions I have about that time, because, mm-hmm. you know, I know the life of a touring poet, which is different than a touring musician, but I do know that, you know, the life on the road can also be lonely. It could be isolating. If you play a space that, you know, maybe you don't know a lot of people in that town, you know, you have to go somewhere at the end of the night and then you're like, what the fuck, you know? So, one, like, how did you occupy your time, or how do you occupy your time on the road even now? But two, during that time where it was lean, you know, what kept you getting out on the road, and how did you sustain yourself in addition to those road gigs?
Yeah, like the necessity breeds creation, right? So it's like the necessity of having to figure it out by myself on the road. I just would. The cool thing is, some of the fans, like the early fans, I became friends. They would let me crash at their house, right? That's where I would stay. I wasn't staying in hotels or anything. And those are like my biggest diehard fans who spend all their money with me on my merch and everything. They became like friends or family. So like I really built this core fan base through having to figure it out and being alone. And, you know, I had to make friends basically. And these friends became my fans. And then those became like my dedicated hardcore group that kind of like helped me propel and expand outward. So I think, you know, the loneliness thing for sure is a factor. Any touring artist, it kind of comes with the territory. But you know me, I'm a pretty like outgoing, friendly person. I make friends in any room. Yeah. So for me, it was always like fun. I never looked at it as being like, shit, I'm out here in the middle of, you know, Boise, Idaho, and I don't know anybody. It was like, all right, how do I get out of this jam, you know, and meet some people?
Well, right. And there's two things about being an MC that, you do very well. And one of them is to what you just said, that you are almost like a natural host, it feels like, you know. Have you always been, not saying that you are entirely extroverted, some of, you know, my favorite extroverts are ultimately like introverts, they just can perform, but have you always been able to, you know, stand up and you know, like engage a space?
Pretty much, you know, I'm the youngest of a big family, so I think that helps. Because I like had to fight for attention and all my siblings are like creative, outgoing, big personality type of folks. So I think that created maybe some of the personality types that has led to some of my success in terms of like being comfortable in spaces and talking to people. So I think, you know, that's definitely a factor, but I am incredibly introverted, like, especially because I've been touring for so long. Like, man, this pandemic has been the first time I've been home, like literally like in my home for more than a month or two at a time. And it's like, whoa, like I never realized how often I was on the road until I was actually like sitting at home and had to be still for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing you do very well as a rapper is you can rap for real. You have a lot of different styles. But one of the things, and I remember this early on, you could also rhyme very quickly.
Yeah. the tongue twist the shit.
Yeah. And so, I mean, which seems like a Chicago tradition in some ways, you know, and not sure. Solely, but you know, so I wonder also where, you know, does that ability come because you're in a city that has Twista and, you know, Do or Die, you know, like all of these folks, Crucial Conflict, who rap incredibly quickly.
Yeah, like take what I said about the family and apply it to the hip hop scene where it's like you have to stand out amongst all these amazingly talented creatives. And I feel like I found a niche with that where it was like, and I love Twista and I have a couple songs with him and, you know, like that's the dude. And one of my idols as an MC. So I think it came from, you know, I think a lot of the fast rapping thing for me was like, let me show off and show y'all that I can do this. And then since then, it's been like pulling back. Like, how do I say less with more? How do I space out words? And that's something that I haven't perfected yet. I'm learning how to do, because I think when you have a lot of words jumbled in, you can mask some of the flaws or maybe some of the weaker lyricism. And so, to be frank, I did that. You know, I was like rapping really fast, maybe not saying as much. And so now, like, as I've grown as an artist, I've kind of changed that up a little bit. And I don't need to be so, look what I can do. It's more like, look what I got to say, you know?
Right. Well, and you see a lot of this growth on your new project, Moonflower, which is an EP, just came out, which does feel different than you know, some of what I've heard, some of your prior projects. And so,
yeah.
You know, it's pretty much brand new in the world. You release a project in a pandemic for someone who's touring. So, you know, first of all, just talk about how it came about and how long maybe you've been working on it.
Yeah, that project is really different for me. It's very chill. It's like a more calm, peaceful kind of soundscape. I wrote a lot of the words to it without any beat. I was traveling. I was actually in Thailand, and I wrote most of that album in Thailand without any production, just kind of like ideas and thoughts. And I was on these long flights and these long drives and in this whole different space that felt like a different planet to me. And so it's different, I think, partially because I wrote the words first, and normally I get the production first, and the production kind of indicates what the song is going to be about, where this was the opposite. And I've never worked that way, where it's like the content, the lyrics, the concepts came first, and then I kind of came across the production after I had these ideas, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And a lot more singing. I sing on it. I use my voice in a different way, you know, than I've ever done on other songs.
Yeah. And now what does that mean to put out a project then when you can't go out and share it live? I mean, what are some of the things that you yourself are doing? I've seen some on social media, but what are some of the things you've been doing in order to, you know, make sure people have this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm trying to figure it out as I go with it. You know, I've been trying to do some more creative things to engage the fans, just in terms of like contest, giveaway, things like that. You know, like this is my first vinyl, which I'm super stoked on. I got the test pressing back here.
Oh, wow. Sounds really congrats. Fantastic. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like a perfect project to have on wax too, so I feel like that generated some more excitement, because it's the first time I've done that. But it is weird to not be able to go out and play these songs live. So it's like I've been doing some live streams of it where I perform it live with one of the producers on it, but it's not the same, man. There's no comparing to being on the road and doing these songs live. But I think, you know, because the songs are more peaceful and poetic, I feel like it's a good project to just sit with without seeing it live. And, you know, at some point I'll get to go out, I hope, and do these songs in front of people.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of people being able to like just sit with the record for a little bit of time before I go out and like really blast it, you know?
Well, that's why I didn't know when you had started writing it, because it does feel like a record of this moment. You know, because it is contemplative, because it is slower, because it does feel like you're kind of, or as a listener, you know, it's something to chew on at home, you know, in not isolation per se, but like, you know, it's like you and your headphone, it's like headphone music in that way.
Yeah, it's headphone music. Yeah. You know, that wasn't my intention, but I'm glad that it kind of worked out that way. Like, I decided not to wait to put it out and put it out at this time, because it felt like it could maybe be a healing piece of art that people could connect with. It's crazy because some of these songs feel like they're written about specifically like the coronavirus or like the pandemic and the time that we're in.
Right.
And they aren't, you know, or it could be about a lot of the things that we've seen in the last few months. But it was kind of like, you know, me thinking about just these concepts and they happen to connect, which to me is a good sign, because that means that there are bigger issues that I'm dealing with here that maybe other people will be able to connect with in 5, 10, 20 years. And I wasn't trying to like make something that was timeless by any means. I just wanted to have something that was a little bit more broader, that people could connect with later in time.
Yeah. No, for sure. Folks, I'm talking to, of course, Prob Cause in the Corner Store, in part about his new EP, Moonflower. And, you know, this is you just mentioned, you know, you have vinyl that people can be able to purchase of this EP. Of course, it's streamable. You know, I was listening to it on a major platform that I won't name until they write a check to the Corner Store. But, you know, this is a findable record. You also, you know, I alluded to it and you mentioned a little bit. You are also you do more than just rhyme. Right. And so some of what you make is visual art, which appears in a lot of different places, including your own merch. But what are some of the other things that you are doing and have been doing creatively?
Well, this project too, it's a good example because I did all the artwork. I did some animations for it. I really like tried to integrate my visual aesthetic into it and hoping that it would connect with the songs as well. But you know, I've been doing coloring books. That's a big thing that I love to do.
Yeah.
That people seem to love during this time in quarantine also. I'm working on a children's book that I'm hoping to have out in the next year. It's called The Gorilla and the Unicorn. It's about an interracial couple who has interracial babies and trying to make that a little more accessible to kids and make and normalize it in a different way. So I'm kind of like experimenting with all these things. I also do animation with a friend of mine, Elijah Alvarado, who's another Chicago creative.
Yeah, great, great videographer, filmmaker.
Yep. Yeah. He's done some Chance the Rapper videos, and he helped work on Slice with Austin Vesley, who's another awesome Chicago filmmaker. So I collaborate with Elijah on tons of animation. Some of them are just like fun cartoons that are like almost like political commentary of the moment. And then some of them are a little bit more in-depth artistic pieces. So I'm kind of like dabbling in all these different worlds. But I, you know, I come from the roots of painting and graffiti. Graffiti was like my first introduction into hip hop, the whole world of hip hop. You know, it all started with graffiti. So it kind of comes from that core. And I've built off that, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I know. I love seeing all of the work that you're talking about, which of course people could find in part on your socials and where, as people are listening, where's the best space to find you?
Instagram, just at Probcause, PROBCAUSE, and Twitter, same thing, just Twitter at Probcause, or Probcause.com. Everything's on there.
Yeah.
And I got like all this stuff, all the coloring books and everything I'm talking about is up on those spaces. Even if you also, if you don't want to buy one, I have them for free. They're digital on the website. So you can just like download the coloring book and print the pages at home and let your kids color them, and or you could color them whatever. You know,
right.
Whatever you
want to do. Prob Cause is for the kids. I mean, that's very clear.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. Speaking of, how did that name come about? Does it come from your graffiti days or how did you? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was writing Prob. It was kind of like a play where it's like, you know, you need Prob Cause to arrest me and I'm giving it to you by writing it on the wall. And then it just, you know, I kept running with it. And it became my nickname through the graffiti world. And so it was like, it didn't make sense to try to like come up with a different name as a rapper. It was already my nickname and everyone was calling me Prob. So I just kind of ran with it, you know?
Yeah, no, of course. And who, crew wise, were you, or what writers inspired, you know, we talked about some of the early MCs, but what about some of the writers that inspired you too?
Yeah, you know, so I grew up in Evanston, like just north of Chicago. And believe it or not, Evanston had a pretty awesome graffiti scene when I was coming up.
Yeah.
Some of these cats are like very much all city legends. So I grew up idolizing people like Kais. My peers were people like Hyphen and Oates. And then those people were friends with like Vespa and Goma and Rebel and Wiz, RIP Wiz, and a lot of these other folks. So like, the people I was surrounded by who are now, like, I would consider them like Chicago graffiti legends, a lot of them. And so that's what I was like watching. And, you know, they would do like public murals in Evanston. And so I like just go sit and chill and watch them paint all day. And I was like, this vibe is so cool. I want to be a part of this. And I was never like really great at graffiti. And I didn't really have like the balls to do some of the crazy shit that some of these folks were doing. So I never like ran fully with it, but I always idolized them. And that was really my introduction to all of it, to the music and just to the culture in general.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you come from a big family, and I know you're close with them and close with your parents. I mean, how supportive or not supportive have they been through all of these iterations of you as a creative? I mean, you know, were they cool with you running around with graffiti folks? Are they like, how do they feel about you being out of the city most of the year? How do they feel about all this?
Well, you know, I got into some legal issues doing graffiti, which was one of the reasons I kind of like put it on pause a little bit. So they didn't like that. But as far as like, supporting my creative endeavors, they were always very supportive. I think my older siblings broke them in a little bit for me. So by the time I was, you know, in high school and trying to figure out what I wanted to do in life, they were pretty supportive of any route I wanted to take. I think they didn't think it would turn into this. I don't think they knew, and neither did I. I don't think like they knew it would become my career. But they were never like, they never told me I couldn't do it or that I shouldn't do it. But they always encouraged me to, if I'm gonna do it, figure out how I can use it to not only support myself, but sustain myself beyond just like a year or two. And just made me kind of be smart about how I approached it. You know, because a lot of rappers will rap for 1 or 2 or 3 years and kind of fizzle out, right? Or they get bored, or it just doesn't get them to where they want to be, and so they tap out. And so I think they instilled this concept of like sticking with things that really has helped me get to where I am now, because I never let go of it, even at the times where it was like, I'm broke, nobody cares about my music, no one's coming to my shows, I should just give up and do something else. But, you know, I didn't have that mentality. I wasn't raised with that mentality. So I always stuck with it. And like I said, I love creating the process of creating so much that I couldn't stop. I can't stop. That's just not in my DNA. I love it way too much. And I don't know who I am without it. So like, even if I didn't have the fans and the support, I would still be just, you know, alone in my cuckoo's nest writing shit.
Yeah. What was that tipping point for you? You know, you'd said about 6 or 7 years now, this has been your life. You know, you make a career off your creativity. What was that point where you went from having side hustles and other gigs? What kind of eventually got you on and over?
So I put out the project that you're on, the Recipe Volume 2, which has you, and it had a lot of other Chicago folks who are also like, Chance the Rapper's on it. Ad 2 is on it.
Yeah, no, it's a great record. A great record. Yeah, it's a great record. I love that record.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So I think I kind of, by putting that project out and placing myself next to all these other really talented artists and making cool songs with them, it kind of gave me more of a spotlight, at least in Chicago. And that transcended to more national recognition. So it was Chance and I put a song out called LSD. That became kind of like a big underground hit, you could say. And that was one of the first songs that really gave me any national attention. And then from there, this dude Grammatic, who's a producer, pretty well-known producer in the electronic world, his beats are straight hip-hop beats. They're not, nothing's different between them and traditional hip-hop beats, except they have like bigger kick drums and bigger snares. He reached out to me to do a song. And we ended up making the song called Back to the Future, which became another kind of hit within the electronic world. And between LSD and that all happening within a year or two from each other, it kind of just propelled me upward. So it was like these two songs plus the album that was received really well just introduced me to a lot of new people who've stuck with me and told their friends about me, or I don't know how it expanded, but it just kept growing from there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's been great to see, man. It's been,
thank you.
You know, just from a distance and at some points, you know, from close, it's just been really, really dope. And the times that I've had an opportunity to see you, it's just been very powerful and very exciting. What are some of the things that you are now? I know you're always working. What are some of the things you're working on now?
So actually, I got a plug. I'm doing a fundraiser for the space called Connections for the Homeless. It's in Evanston. They do amazing work. And I'm going to do a little fundraiser for them a week from Friday. So that's November 20th. I do this thing called Tunes and Tunes, which is basically DJ sets that I put together. And I animate myself in a room that doesn't look too different from this and have like crazy things going on in the background. It's like this animated world. So I'm going to put a new one of those out. It's going to be a live stream, and we're going to try to raise some funds for these people who are literally people I went to high school with, who are just, you know, shit's tough for them right now, especially with the pandemic. So trying to do more community engaged work, which has always been important to me. But I think being home for this amount of time, for almost a year, has just made me more aware of what's going on, especially in the community that I was raised in. So I'm just trying to do more work in Evanston and on the north side of Chicago and Rogers Park, and try to, you know, help where I can, make some money for these people and donate some funds where I can. So that's kind of like where my head is at right now.
No, that's dope, man. Well, listen, you continue to do great and important work, and you've been at it long enough where it's just like, this is really a part of you, and it's an important contribution both to the culture of the city and beyond. And so, you know, salutes, man. Just thank you for what you do, for real. Before we get out one more time, let's point people to where they could be in tune with what you're doing.
Yeah, just probcause.com is probably the best, like, one-off. Go check me out there, because everything's there. The live stream will be, like, on my Twitch, on my YouTube channel, will be streaming it live. And so if you want to just follow me, like, a lot, whatever your preferred social media is, everything is just at probcause.
Okay. That's what's up, man. Thank you for being in the corner store. Very excited for what you'll continue to put out. And for real, the discography is long. And in particular, this Moonflower is a very special project at a special time. PropCause, thank you, man. Thanks for being in the corner store.
Thank you so much, Kevin, man. Appreciate you and everything you do for the city and beyond. You know, you're a true mensch.
Appreciate you, man. Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official corner store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the snack door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the corner store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The corner store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.